Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome to the Saving with Steve show. We talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything under the sun that relates to you having a happier, healthier relationship with money. So you own a piece of property, maybe a rental property, a commercial property, a farm, piece of land, a boat, a plane. And you know what? You're tired of tenants, trash, toilets. You're tired of your state regulations and you want out, but you don't know how to deal with the taxes. That's why we have Bill Exeter here, the CEO of Exeter 1031 and Exeter Trust Companies. He's going to walk us through it. And we're going to be going into talking about maximizing Social Security, how to make sure your New Year's resolution sticks, and how to deal with that, how to cure that New Year's debt hangover. So with that, I want to introduce everybody to Bill Exeter. Bill, thanks for joining us on the show today.
Thank you, Steve. Glad to be here. Thank you for having us.
Oh, you know what? I'm actually really excited to have you here because, you know what? You are so accomplished and you educate people all the time. But I just want to share a couple tidbits, not the whole resume, if that's okay.
Absolutely. Please don't.
Bill is a professional speaker, author, and a continuing education instructor when it comes to either tax code, guys. So bear with me. I don't want to bore everybody right in the start. But 1031 exchanges, 1033 exchanges, people have had tenants in common, commonly known as a TIC, or you've possibly heard or not heard about Delaware Statutory Trust. Bill is so experienced in the 1031 exchange world, his firm has done over 125,000 of them. On top of that, he's a trusted fiduciary. He does expert witness testimony. He works with a lobbyist for this organization. So we've just got a world of information here. And quite frankly, we're going to try and squeeze every ounce of it out of him. I want to thank you for joining our show. And you know what? Just to start it off, for those who don't know, you know what? Can you provide a basic overview of a 1031 exchange, kind of what it is?
Sure. And probably a perfect way to do that is to use an example. So let's assume somebody bought a single family house and it became a rental property and you know, it's gone up in value. And 3, 4, 5 years later, they decide, I really like this rental property business. I'm ready to do a duplex or a fourplex or an eightplex or what have you. They're going to sell their single family and they meet with their accountant. And that's when they get the OMG on taxes and how much they're going to have to pay. And that's where the accountant says you should look at a 1031 exchange. And that allows them to sell that single family, defer the payment of all their taxes, all their capital gain, depreciation, recapture, and Medicare surcharge by reinvesting in other replacement property. And so most investors will sell one and buy up, whether that means buy a multifamily and get a duplex or fourplex, or whether that means buy 2 or 3 or 4 single families. You know, they're really diversifying their risk, diversifying their cash flow, et cetera. And it's really all about building that worth.
Mm-hmm. You know what? It was really interesting. You said they get to defer their capital gains, their deferred recapture, as well as the net investment tax or the Obamacare tax is what it's called. And what people don't quite realize is that's about 38% of your profit. And that's a big, oh my God, like you said. It's really interesting. I was like, oh yeah, I think people need to know that. So, you know what? So why would people look to do the 1031? We talked about the tax benefits. What other benefits are there?
Sure. Well, a lot of people are either in a consolidation strategy. So if they're getting closer in retirement, they go, you know, let's get rid of some of these labor intensive properties and get into something that's easier to manage. So they may sell 3 or 4 and buy one or buy something that's easier to manage or go into something that you mentioned, the Delaware Statutory Trust, things like that. Others, especially when they're young, younger, you're building your wealth. You may sell one and buy two or three, and you're diversifying your portfolio. Others, when you're, you know, getting ready to go into or coming out of a recession, you might reposition to take advantage of the next wave. And so they use the 1031 to do all of that without having to pay the taxes. So it's really a great way to reposition depending on what your goals and objectives are. And then you mentioned, you know, it's tax deferred. A lot of people call it tax free, but it's really tax deferred. You're kicking the can down the road. But if you keep exchanging throughout your lifetime, and then when you pass on and you leave the property to your heirs, your kids, grandkids, whomever, they get a step up in cost basis. So the capital gain goes away, the depreciation recapture goes away, and they avoid the Medicare surcharge, the Obamacare tax. So we have a morbid sense of humor. We call it swap until you drop. So keep exchanging, kick the can down the road forever, and then when you pass on, your kids don't have to pay anything.
So now, here's a couple of questions. California, they're, when it comes to landlords, they're not very kind to landlords. The regulations are more for beneficial for the tenants, especially when you see things right now where people can't evict people, they're not allowing to go through the courts. So many people look to sell. Can they 1031 exchange into another state?
Absolutely. All 50 states would qualify, including some of the territories. So they could go into Guam, Marianas Islands, U.S. Virgin Islands. Interestingly, the only one they can't exchange into is Puerto Rico, but all the rest would qualify. So it gives you a great way to avoid or get rid of or get out of a state that has very unfavorable business climate. And we're certainly seeing a lot of clients leave California.
Okay, so I know you've worked with some international clients just from our past conversations. So for example, we have an affiliate called UK Health Radio in London, England. If somebody were to look to do some sort of exchange from the United States to the UK or vice versa, is that possible?
It's good question. If they are selling a U.S. property, they can't 1031 exchange into a foreign asset. It has to be either U.S. for U.S. or it can be foreign to foreign. And a lot of stuff you read on the internet out there will tell you you can't do a foreign property exchange. What they mean is you can't sell U.S. and buy foreign or sell foreign and buy U.S., but you can sell foreign rental property and exchange into other foreign rental property. It won't defer any of the foreign country taxes, of course. You're paying whatever you would pay in those countries, but it will defer the U.S. tax consequence. So you really have to figure out what your U.S. tax consequence is and see if it's worth doing it.
Okay, that's good to know. It's good to know. So let's talk about what an investor can exchange with a 1031.
There's a lot of, well, I should probably back up. So there's really two issues that we talk about a lot. One is qualified use, and that means all the properties they sell, all the properties they buy have to be held for rental, investment, or business use. And then the second is like-kind property, and that's where there's a lot of misinformation out there.
Oh,
there's curriculum that still says condo for condo, and that is absolutely false. Like-kind literally means you're selling real estate, and you have to buy something that is also real estate. So it's fairly straightforward. But there's assets that you wouldn't normally think would qualify as like-kind, such as the Delaware Statutory Trust you mentioned, fractional ownership through like a tenant in common structure, oil and gas interest, mineral rights, air rights, water rights, things like that would also be considered real property in most of the states.
Okay, so I got to ask this question. For example, and this is just, I want to throw this out there because I know a gentleman that what he does is he rents and leases out his plane, okay? And he's in a position where he's done with the plane. And he said, you know, I got this depreciation. It's still worth some money. It's not worth as much before, but the 197 depreciation is very significant. Can he 1031 that plane into another plane?
Glad you brought that up because you used to be able to, but the Tax Reform Act of 2017 eliminated personal property. So now the only type of asset you can exchange is real estate. Personal property like aircraft. We used to do a lot of aircraft exchanges, but that's gone.
Okay.
That always is an issue. You still have some of the same issues with real estate if someone's done a cost segregation analysis or taken 179 bonus depreciation, accelerated depreciation, things like that. That's still something the financial advisor and or accountant would have to walk them through to see what that might be and, you know, just see what the tax consequences might be there.
Okay, so, and I've got to ask this because this is a viewer question. Again, if you're watching us, you can go to viewers@savingwithsteve.us and ask a question, and we'll get it answered. We kind of sneaked out that you were coming on the show. So one person asked this question.
Sure.
He rents out his boat for charter, and it's a business, and he's looking at doing a 1031 exchange because obviously the boat's not worth as much, but again, he's got that massive amount of depreciation. Can he go from one boat to the next inside that business for using a 1031 exchange?
So unfortunately, they used to be able to, but it's the same issue. The Tax Reform Act eliminated that, so that unfortunately eliminates boats and anything that's not considered real property.
Okay, all right. And if somebody's using, like, for example, you have a quarry, they're selling the quarry, they want to use the proceeds from that quarry to maybe buy rental properties, do they have the ability to do something like that?
Absolutely. So the quarry, of course, is probably all going to be considered real property unless there's a personal property located on the quarry, you know, equipment, trucking, whatever. But most of it's going to be considered real estate. So that would certainly qualify as like kind to other real estate.
Okay.
And it's a great way to get out of something that maybe is not producing as much income as you'd like it to and into something that would produce more income.
So, and you know what, I just want to point this out. There's a couple farmers out there that have kids that no longer want to operate the farm after, you know, family having the farm for 50 or 60 years. And you know what? They can actually sell that farm, 1031 exchange into a Home Depot, a Lowe's, or something like that through a Delaware statutory trust, or become part of an LLC that holds real estate, or a tenant in common if they want.
Absolutely. That's a really good example. We have a lot of clients that are farmers, and that's exactly what we see. The kids don't want to carry on the tradition. And you see a lot of the independents selling to the corporate farms and what have you. And again, selling farm or ranch land or timberland, all of that is considered rental investment or business use property. So it qualifies into the qualified use, and it's real estate. So it certainly qualifies for like-kind property.
Okay, I know we have election stuff and all that stuff. Mr. Biden, obviously president-elect, has proposed to restrict or limit the use of 1031 exchanges. You know, can you tell everybody what that really means?
Sure. You know, the first thing is this is not a political issue in terms of Democrats and Republicans versus each other, what have you. I've been doing this for 36 years. Every 3, 4, 5 years, almost every administration has proposed some kind of change. Almost every Congress has proposed some kind of change. So it's more about educating Congress as to what the benefits are and why they should not go away. What President-elect Biden has proposed, and this was proposed back in March pre-COVID-19. So we don't know if any of this would change because now we're fighting a pretty destructive disease. But what he proposed was if your adjusted gross income is $400,000 or more, and actually he didn't call it AGI. He just said if you make more than $400,000, you won't qualify for 1031 exchange treatment. And if you make less than $400,000, you will qualify for 1031 exchange treatment is effectively what it boils down to. Now, what people don't realize is normally when they define how much you make, it's adjusted gross income. And part of adjusted gross income is your capital gain. So if you sell real estate, in a lot of cases, the sale of real estate could push you right over the $400,000 adjusted gross income just for that year, and you may not qualify for 1031 exchange treatment.
Oh.
So when he's trying to tell people, I'm just going to restrict it for the wealthy, actually, most of the exchange clients are not wealthy. They're just you and I, Joe Blow. They've got 2 or 3 or 4 rental properties, and it actually could hurt the average investor. So we obviously take it seriously, and we have, I think it's either 16, maybe even 18 industry trade groups now that have formed a coalition specifically to educate Congress on the benefits of 1031, how they actually work, and what the devastating effect would be, not just to real estate, but the entire economy if 1031s were to go away.
That's great. Hey, look, if you go to Exeter, EXETERCO.com, you can get Bill's 1031 exchange guide. It's a great piece of education and information, so you can get more educated on 1031s. Hey, we're going to pay some bills. Stick with us. We'll be right back with more of Bill Exeter.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, I want to welcome you back to the Saving with Steve Show. Again, we talk about everything under the sun that enables you to have a healthier, happier relationship with money. Now, I truly want to thank everybody who's tuning in. I appreciate you letting your friends, family, associates know about the show. All the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information and insight on Saving with Steve, I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel so never miss a show. Check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio, New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Network, and all of these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and help you live a life of financial and personal freedom. Also, you can follow us up at Saving with Steve Sexton Facebook. You can get subscribed there. Please follow us, subscribe on. We'll make sure you get all the great content, gift information, things like Bill's books. Bill Exeter, I want to thank you and welcome you back to the show. Again, Bill's been helping us out with 1031 exchanges. A second half of Bill's segment here, we want to talk about self-directed IRA questions, okay? A lot of people don't understand what a self-directed IRA is. Bill, again, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Okay, let's start out. What does the term self-directed IRA really mean?
You know, that's a great question because a lot of folks don't really realize it. But from my perspective, all IRAs are self-directed. The clients choose where to put the IRA, and they may choose to put the IRA at a commercial bank, and they invest in certificates of deposit or money market funds, or they choose to put it with a securities brokerage firm, and they buy stocks or bonds or mutual funds, or they can choose to put the funds with the trust company. Mm-hmm. And so it really boils down to what does the IRA custodian allow them to invest in? And that's what differentiates all these. So the industry has kind of used or coined the term self-directed IRA to mean those IRA custodians that allow what we call alternative investments or non-traditional or non-standard investments other than the publicly traded assets.
Okay, so I'm going to boil it down a little more simple. Whether you're with Schwab, Fidelity, Exeter Trust Company, or any other what's called a broker-dealer or custodian, in each custodian says, hey, we have a list of investments that you can pick and choose from. And if they don't allow Delaware statutory trusts, they don't. If they don't allow stocks, they don't. If they don't allow mutual funds, they don't. Some of them allow them all. Some of them allow very little. So when people look at a self-directed IRA, you even if you have a 401k, you self-direct it because you pick and choose the investments. It just depends on which ones are available. Quite frankly, according to regulation, most 401ks are only required to have three different investments. A money market, a bond fund, and a growth fund. That's it. So when you're looking at self-directed IRAs, you want to look around, especially if you're going to make an investment into something that might be non-traditional, to one that's going to give you the best terms, so on. Am I right in that, Bill?
Absolutely, right on the money.
Okay, great. So now, what investors really need to know about a self-directed IRAs? Maybe I just spilled the beans on that. I don't know.
No, that was a good summary, though. They get kind of confused as to what should I do first. So I think the investor first needs to sit down with their financial advisor and really decide, you know, what do you want to invest in? What are you interested in? What do you have a passion for? So a lot of people through their IRAs or 401ks do stocks and bonds and mutual funds, and that's what they're comfortable with. A lot of our clients, because we're very real estate centric, are focused on real estate, and they've made a lot of money in real estate, and they don't like stocks, bonds, and mutual funds because they don't understand that. So they really have to sit down and ask that question. What are you comfortable with? What do you want to invest in? Do you want a diversified portfolio? A lot of our clients are real estate guys and gals, and they will not do anything but real estate. But, mm-hmm. So they have to decide what they want to invest in. And And then once they get to that point, then you can choose the IRA custodian that's right for what you want to do. There's IRA custodians that are really good with stocks, bonds, and mutual funds like Schwab and Fidelity, et cetera, and TD Ameritrade. They can execute those trades and it's cheap and what have you. You know, in our case at Exeter Trust Company, our specialty is real estate. So folks who want to roll the IRA over to us and buy real estate or invest in mortgages or deeds of trust or tax lien certificates and things like that would choose somebody like us to invest in that. And so it really, you know, choose what you want to invest in first and then go and look for the right IRA custodian who's got the expertise that they need as an investor.
Okay. So now there's a common question here. Can an investor buy a home in their self-directed IRA and live in it?
Ooh, good question. And lots of folks try. but you can't have anything, any business dealings or investment dealings between yourself as a person or individual and your own IRA. It's a prohibited transaction. So you can't buy a home and live in it. You can't lend yourself money. You can't go to the bank and borrow money and pledge your IRA as collateral. Those are all prohibited because it's self-dealing. Mm-hmm. There's more prohibited transactions than just those, but that gives you kind of a flavor of what you shouldn't be doing.
Let's further that a little bit. From time to time, we have people come into my office, and a lot of people know I do advanced tax planning. And what they've done is they have a son who has a wonderful company. And what they will do is the father will say, hey, I want to invest in your company. And what I will do is set up an LLC or a self-directed IRA and buy shares in your company. Can that be done?
It's a good question. So they're potentially, yes. One of the ways you can do it relatively easily is at launch. So when the company is being formed, there are no investors initially. So at that point, father, son, family, whoever can all both go in. And as long as they go in and invest at exactly the same time, there wouldn't be a prohibited transaction issue. There's all sorts of other planning possibilities that might work, but they have to look at, is it a disregarded entity or disregarded party, disqualified party, and whether that would create a prohibited transaction. So that's what's really important to drill down and look at the proposed structure to see if it creates a prohibited transaction.
Okay. In addition to that, I want to go back to, there's many people who have utilized their IRA to acquire rental properties and they put it inside there. Is it best to set up the rental property in like an LLC and then put the shares inside of your self-directed IRA?
Good question. That's probably a personal choice. There's a lot of moving parts there. So one is the concern always is, what if something goes wrong with the rental property and they want to sue the owner? Well, the owner, if you own it directly in your IRA, is the IRA. So they would sue Exeter Trust Company as custodian of your IRA. And that puts your entire IRA in jeopardy. So certainly having the IRA form an LLC, capitalize the LLC, and then have the LLC go buy the real estate puts that legal barrier there to hopefully protect your IRA. Some people like to do the IRA structure so the IRA can be managed by them and have a checkbook. And that may the way they can respond very quickly to real estate related investments where they have to write a check and get it done fast. So there's a lot of pros and whatnot.
I was going to say, if we have a couple seconds, could you talk about that? Because I know people have gotten in trouble with that.
Yeah, the biggest risk there is not the structure, but the fact that investors don't know what they don't know. And they may write a check and do something that's actually a prohibited transaction. They don't know it. And because it's going through the LLC and not directly through the IRA, we don't catch it. So there's some risk there if you don't know what you're doing.
Okay, so the key here is if you're looking at putting a rental property in a self-directed IRA, it's important that you understand the process and the reporting and the documentation that's required. Otherwise, the IRS is just going to think you took money out for yourself.
Absolutely. And that's the key there is to remember that you don't own the real estate, the IRA does, and all the revenue has to go into the IRA, all the expenses have to be paid by the IRA.
Mm-hmm. And if it's done improperly and you're under the age of 59 and a half, you could get a penalty for that, as well as the distribution, plus the taxes on the distribution and so on. Okay, so that's really, really good. Why would an investor want to invest in an alternative investment or a non-traditional or non-standard investment?
You know, I think it boils down to a couple of things. One is some investors are very comfortable with a specific investment niche, whether it be real estate or, you know, some are getting into cryptocurrencies, you know, et cetera. And they want to invest in what they know, what they understand, and they can make more money doing that. And they don't necessarily understand the companies that are publicly traded. So they want to get away from publicly traded assets and get into something they really really know. Others look at it as, I want to diversify. I want some in the stock and bond markets, but I also want some in other markets, so I'm diversified. So if one market goes down, I've got the other market going up. Some want complete control over their IRA, and they want to invest in things they can go out and touch and see and feel, etc. So it's more of the do-it-yourselfers almost, where they want to go out and drive their own car, basically.
Okay, so I want to, you know, we got about a minute and a half left, but I want to talk about Exeter 1031 compared to other traditional qualified intermediaries. Why is there a difference between what you do and what they do? I know it because I've seen you, and I've seen you save people before. So please help us understand that.
Sure. Your most qualified intermediaries, in fact, 99% plus, are not licensed, regulated, or audited by anybody. There's no government oversight. So I think our biggest strength is we took a couple of years and went through the regulatory review process. So we now have a trust charter. All of the funds are held by Exeter Trust Company, which means we are one of the few qualified intermediaries that has direct government oversight. And most of the exchange companies that have failed over the years could have been prevented had there been government oversight. So I think that's the most critical difference between us and a lot of the others. And then we're much more advisory and consultative. So we'll jump on a phone call with the client and their advisors and walk through issues and, you know, tell them what we've seen other clients and other advisors do and things like that, where most qualified intermediaries are just processors.
Okay. That's wonderful to know, because over the years that I've known you, I've talked to some of the people that you have actually saved because somebody that wasn't qualified tried to do the intermediary stuff and it just, quite frankly, didn't work out because they didn't know all the ins and outs like you guys do. I want to thank you for joining us today. How can people get to you? What's your website? Please share that with us.
Sure. You can email me directly if you'd like at wexeter@exeterco.com, or you can also use our general email, which is ask@exeterco.com. So it's ask@exeterco.com. You can call me at 619-239-3091. That's 619-239-3091. Or go to our website, exeterco.com, and all of our contact information is out there.
I would recommend everybody, if you're interested in this, go to exeterco.com just so you can get the education, because there's a lot of education there just by downloading the 1031 guide, by looking at the ins and outs of things. I love the education piece because it makes all the difference. It just means you're not selling, you're just educating, which is great. So, Bill, I want to thank you for joining us today. We'll look forward to seeing you in the future. And again, have a great 2021.
Happy New Year to you too.
Thanks. We'll see you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Again, that was Bill Exeter talking about 1031 exchanges and self-directed IRAs. It's very important, if you're looking at investing in anything, that you go about talking with a financial advisor and learn all the ins and outs. So stick with us. We're going to be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to the show. This is Steve Sexton with the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. That was Bill Exeter we had. If you are looking to get his Exeter 1031 exchange guide, the one I put up on the screen, just go to www.exeterco.com. You know what? It's the best piece of education when it comes to 1031 exchanges. Again, I can't say this enough. If you're looking at alternative investments, whether they're real estate related, whether they're gold, minerals, diamonds, whatever, anything alternative, non-standard, non-traditional, you want to sit down there and know exactly what you're getting into before you do it. Know the players, look at the balance sheets, understand how it works, what the economic effects would be. You know what? The last thing you want to do is invest in a piece of property where a major player in that industry is going away. You know what? You just go to Amana, Iowa. Whirlpool moved. I mean, there's tens of thousands of jobs that are no longer there and multiple trickle-down effect because of stuff like that. And if you were looking at a non-traditional investment in that area, you might not have the economic footprint to make it work. So if you know that in advance, it makes all the difference in the world. So all I'm saying is get a little bit educated. You don't have to be down in the weeds, but if you understand how it works, what are the influences are to make it work or be a positive investment, it'll make a big difference in your life. Now, we're going to be talking about a couple things, but before we do, I want to thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you letting your friends, family, and associates know about the show. You know what? All the replays are available at www.savingwithsteve.us. Again, that's www.savingwithsteve.us. You can please join our Facebook page at Saving with Steve Sexton. Go again, that's Saving with Steve Sexton. That means you'll be able to get all the information, any downloads, any special gifts that our guests are beginning to giving out, extra little things for you. I want to take this time to have you check out our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, and Las Vegas TV Network. All these networks, as I said before, are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of financial and personal freedom. So let's move on to the next little segment here. Now, what we want to do is we want to talk about this 2021 New Year's resolution. Now, it's interesting about New Year's resolutions. Less than 40% of people who set a New Year's resolution follow through with it throughout the year. In fact, 7 in 10 people surveyed say they have no plans to continue with their New Year's resolution throughout the whole year. So I want to just quote a little Ben Franklin here. He says, hey, be at war with your vices, be at peace with your neighbors, and every new year, be a better man or woman. So when we take a look at that, we say, okay, so what are our New Year's resolutions, all right? What are the things that are important? What should we be thinking about? What should we be doing? The first thing we want to do is get educated, okay? We want to obtain a working knowledge of potential strategies, services, and financial products. Now, you can do this simply by going to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. That's the CFPB, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. You'll find information about mortgages, auto loans, credit cards, personal loans, retirement accounts, annuities, all sorts of things, so you can get a basic understanding of what's going on. Once you have that basic understanding, you can utilize that information to make better informed decisions, ask better questions. That's number one. Get educated. And if you do, you'll be in a better position to reach your goals. Next, you want to prioritize your goals, okay? You want to make sure they're manageable and realistic. Once you set that goal, you want to make sure you have an accountability partner, which means you need to tell somebody, whether it be your wife, whether it be your girlfriend, your fiance, whether that to be your buddy at the office or your neighbor or your friend. Somebody that could make you accountable to inspect what you expect so you can get to where you want to go. It's almost like working out with a buddy, okay? First step in setting up your financial plan is you want to, hey, here's my goal. What are my steps for achieving that goal? Step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Hey, it sounds really simple, right? The next step is to set a date. So if you're developing a budget and analyzing it every single month to look for additional savings, you want to put that in the calendar. You want to schedule it. If that's once a week or once a month, so be it, go do that, okay? And then you want to complete each action step. Set time to work with that accountability partner. Now, when we start doing these things, a lot of people say, hey, 30 people in the United States want to save more as a New Year's resolution, okay? 30%, which is a great number. And I think it's great to save more, but how do we go about doing it? A couple ways. One, first of all, let's understand where we are. We need to find out exactly what we're spending. A lot of people just don't know. And you want to get as detailed as possible with this because the little things matter. So that means what you're spending eating out, how much you putting, how much gas you're putting in the car, your cable bill, your cell phone bill, how much you are dining out, every little expense from the utilities to whatever the case may be, the apps, the wine clubs, everything. List it all down there. Then what you want to do is you look at the things that you're not using. You know, it was interesting. It was funny because my wife and I were talking about this in December. we were looking at her bills, and last March, I talked to her about this fitness app she got because she had wanted to create her New Year's resolution to lose some weight. Now, my wife doesn't need to lose the weight. She looks beautiful as she is, and quite frankly, I've out-punted my coverage if you're using a football euphemism. And you know what? I told her you didn't really need to do that, but she felt she needed to. So she started paying for this app, okay? And she hadn't used it. And I said, hey, have you used it? You know, if not, let's get rid of it. And she goes, no, I plan to use it. I need to do something during COVID. And here we are at the end of the year. We had this little discussion and she started laughing. She goes, you know what? I should have just got rid of that in March because I just haven't used it. So all I'm saying to you is if you haven't used something in a month or so and you can't pinpoint and put it on the schedule that you're actually going to use it, eliminate it. You know what? The app was what, 10, 20 bucks? It's a little bit, but you got to understand every little bit counts. So let's talk a little bit more. Hey, you have coffee? Yes, $3 a cup. Okay. Well, what if I were to buy 120 Keurig cups from Costco at $30, $35? Buy $5 worth of creamer so I can have the coffee that I want. And you know what? Instead of paying $3 a cup, now I'm paying 40 cents. So I'm saving a ton of money each and every month doing that. When it comes to eating out, you know what? We're dining out all the time. Now, I'm not saying cut out dining out. What I am saying is you might want to curtail it back a little bit by planning a better job planning your meals. You know, I've seen people save as much as $300 or $400 a month just from cutting back the eating out. And I've also seen them lose a tremendous amount of weight, which means their physical health gets better as well. So think about those things. Next thing, hey, what are we spending? Can we continue doing the things that we're doing but spend less? You sure can. Look at the cell phone bills. Now, this is quite interesting because we did this as a family because we looked at the cell phone bills and said, hey, you know what? We're with one of the major carriers. We went with one of the smaller carriers, same network that the major carrier's on. We got the same services. Nothing's any different. The only difference is we're not on a contract and we're paying $20 less per person. Saved us $80 a month. We looked at our cable. So many people have all these packages with their cable. They're paying $250, $300 a month. We were too. But when I started doing the research and I found out that I can just get internet for $96, pay $54.99 to AT&T Live, and buy a couple Netflix or Hulu and so on, I can now have all the same stuff, but at $120 less. So I controlled it. I'm saving money. Look, you know what? This is a great time to look at mortgages. But pay 2.5 to 2.75 instead of 3.25 or 4. You know what? You can save a tremendous amount of money on your monthly payment, as well as less interest on the long term. And quite frankly, you can end up paying the same payment, but pay your mortgage off early if you want to. Now, those are just a few things. You want to look at that on all your expenses. And then you want to look at, hey, how much can I save now? Do I need to set aside money into an emergency fund? Or I'm looking to save more in my 401k or to my kids' college or whatever it is. But the next step is really important. You want to put it on automatic. If you're taking withdrawals for a 401k through your payroll deduction, do a payroll deduction to another checking account to save for a house, to save for a car, to save for travel, to save for your kids' college. If you put it on automatic, it's going to happen anyways and you're going to forget about it, which means you're going to accomplish your goal with not a lot of work. And that'll allow you to get through your 2021 resolutions. Stick with us. We got a whole bunch more to come. We're going to talk about the New Year's Eve debt cure. We're going to talk about maximizing Social Security. And we already had Bill Exeter on. So stick with us. We're going to be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to the show. I want to thank everybody for joining us again. I can't thank you enough for tuning in, letting your friends know, family, associates know about the show. Again, If you would like to follow us, please follow us at Saving with Steve Sexton on Facebook or go to savingwithsteve.us. If you have questions, you would like us to do segments, it doesn't matter what it's on, as long as it's related to money or helping people have a better positive life personally and financially, ask the question. Just go to viewers@savingwithsteve.us. That's viewers@savingwithsteve.us. Ask your questions. We'll get it out on the air. We did it today. We'll do it again for you. Whether you're in the US, in the UK, anywhere around the world where the show goes, we're there to help. Again, I want to send a special thanks to our network partners, UK Health Radio, BBS Talk Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, and Las Vegas TV Network. Again, it's all about solving some problems and uplifting your spirit, giving you a life of financial and personal freedom. Now, let's move on to the next segment here. It's really interesting. We had last year was a tough year in 2020. We had people on the verge of losing jobs. Some people lost their jobs. Some people kept it. They're still concerned about losing their job. You've got people who've taken on more debt. In fact, the average expense for people during the Christmas time was $941, and most of that went on a credit card. So we're looking at, oh my God, I've got a credit card hangover. What do I do now? Okay, so let's just have this chat. It happens more often than not, but I want to point something out. Think of life like this. In this little statement, it's always better to earn an interest than pay an interest. I get it. You're in debt. You build things up. Things happen. It's important to start looking at how I can go about getting out of that debt. Because the less debt you have, the more money you have to move towards things that are important to you. And don't get me wrong, debt is a great tool if you use it wisely. A lot of times people, quite frankly, they don't use it wisely and they slowly but surely get themselves in debt and a little bit of trouble. They have more pressure and they're on that treadmill and that just keeps going faster and faster and you get more and more pressure. You could end up with a hairline like mine. Now, here's what you want to start looking at if you're looking to cure that debt hangover. Number one, you want to list all your debts. I'm talking your credit cards, your personal loans, your auto loans, your mortgages. You want to list them all. Second thing you want to do is you want to create a column for the balance. Start with the lowest balance to the highest balance. Then look at the interest rate and then look at the minimum payment. And then you want to look at the date that you want to make sure the list of which one you'd like to pay off first. Some people like to pay off the one that has the highest interest rate first. Others like to pay the one off with the least amount of debt because they want an easy win, a quick win. Okay. They want to create momentum as opposed to grinding through the one that has the highest debt, but also has the highest interest rate. Okay. It could be a while before you get a win. Now, let's just go by the way of the one with the smallest debt, okay, the smallest balance. So here's what you want to do. You want to pay the lowest minimum payment you can make on all the other credit cards and all the other debts, except for the one with the smallest balance. Then what you want to do is you want to pay as much as you possibly can. If that's an extra $100 a month, $50, whatever it is. And what you want to do is you want to keep doing that until it's paid off. Once that's just paid off, then you're going to add what you're paying on the first one to the second one. So let's say the regular payment's $200, but you're paying three, okay? And you finish paying off $300, and the minimum payment on the next one up, even though it has a larger balance, is $100. So now you're paying $400 on the second one, okay? And then you pay off that second one, you're taking that $400 and adding it to the third one, and you're continuing on and on. And pretty soon, you might be making a $1,000 payment, but you know what? You're paying that last one off in 5 months, and you're debt-free from a credit card standpoint. And you can start working on the personal loans and the auto loans. Now, sometimes it makes sense to pay off a mortgage, sometimes it doesn't. So it's important to have a conversation with a financial advisor. So how do I go find that money? Real simple. We were just talking about setting a goal for expense reduction so you can save more. We talked about that. Get your Excel spreadsheet. You can get an app that'll track all your expenses, but you want to make sure you're tracking your expenses on a monthly basis. You want to cut out things like the apps, okay, the fitness apps, the food apps, the food delivery apps, the wine clubs. You want to get rid of those things. If you're looking at cable channels or streaming channels such as Hulu, Netflix, Amazon, all those, if you're not using one, cancel it. Get rid of it. Every little bit counts. If you're able to save $100 a month and put that towards building up an emergency fund in case you lose your job, now you're in a better spot. If you're able to save $200 a month and you're putting money into an emergency fund and saving more to your 401k, better. If you're able to save an extra $200 a month and you're putting it towards paying down your credit cards so you can reduce the pressure on your debt, outstanding. The key here is to stick with it. Now, what a lot of people will do is this: hey, I need to get a side hustle or a side gig, okay? Now, you can go and check on the internet. If you have a college degree, say in English, okay, or math, you can go tutor online for $15 to $20 an hour. You know what? There's a lot of people, I have some clients that actually have done that, that are in their 30s to pay off their debt or accelerating paying off their debt. And basically they figured out, hey, I'm going to make enough money on a monthly basis, which is about $1,000, to start paying off more on their debts. Others have taught people overseas, and some people have actually been taught to write, not taught, but have the ability to write position paper and provide feedback. They also have some degrees, and some people there are making $20,000, $30,000 a year. So if you have background and experience, you might be called in to do a survey because you have that background experience. You're going to have to write something up, and they pay you significantly for it. So go check those things out, okay? So there's also other side hustles, such as Uber, Lyft. I just talked to one of my clients who made the mistake of helping out one of the kids with a business, and that business ended up failing, okay? And he realized the reasons why it failed, and you know what? Hey, I probably shouldn't have done that, because if I'd known those things in advance, I wouldn't have done it. But he figured out that he needs to make at least $40,000 to put back into his savings. And he's planning to do that over the next 2 years by doing Uber and Lyft to make sure he has a solid retirement. You can do those things too. So all I'm saying is there's a number of side hustles that you can use to reduce and eliminate that debt. So the key here is this: find out what your budget is, find out ways you can reduce the expenses that you have, still do the things you want to do, and redirect those dollars into paying down your debt. Get to a point where you're earning interest, not paying an interest, okay? Now, a couple other special thoughts here is this: I find out dining out is a big part of everybody's life, and you know what? It is for ours, but we don't have to do it at every single meal. In fact, I had one client, we figured out he was spending an average of $20 per meal twice a day for 30 days a month. So let's do the math. $40 a day times 5 days a week. Okay. We're looking at $200 per week times 4 weeks, $800 a month. And he goes, I couldn't believe I was wasting that much money. So what he did do is he started, went to Costco, buy the big package of chicken, whatever, and so on, and started planning his meals, started buying bigger things in bulk. He started making his salads as opposed to buying a package salad for $3.75. Instead of paying $3.75 per salad, he was now paying $3.75 for 10 salads. So he started doing those things, got some Tupperware, packaged it up, got a little container, brought it into the office, whatever he does, he prepackaged things. And now he's cut his dining out expenses by about $500. Now that's $500 he can use to things that are important to him, like paying off those credit cards or paying off an auto loan, things like that. Looking at what you're eating at, what you're buying at stores. Like I said, prepackaged items are expensive. You can get the raw materials, eat healthier, and be in a position where you have more money in your pocket at the end of the day. You can do that with getting rid of apps, all sorts of things, but I recommend you check your spending. Those are some of the special tips that I have utilized over the year on my own situation and have helped clients with as well. If you're looking to travel, it's really important as well to save money. So if that's part of your budget, I would recommend you go to Wayne Dunlop's website. Plan your escape now. PlanYourEscape.com. Just go to see that book. It'll tell you tons of travel tips. Or if you want, you know, you need your stuff now, go to UnhookNow.com. Wonderful blog, talks about all the savings. Wayne's a wonderful person, and he can show you where to go if you want to go for a wonderful vacation. So those are other ways you can do that. Other ways you can save money: how about refinancing your mortgage? I had a client that was paying 4% and dropped into paying 2.25%. I think it was 2.5%, saves him almost $1,200 a month on his 15-year fixed. And here's the other thing. He's figured out that he's going to be able to make the same payment before as opposed to his 15-year fixed. He's going to be able to pay it off at 8 years because he's paying that extra money that he was saving. So you could be out of debt earlier. You can have a lower expense. There's many things you can do. If you're involved with COVID, this is also a wonderful time to start talking to your credit card companies. Hey, I'm affected by COVID. I've been laid off. Don't lie to them. Don't hide from them. You need to talk to them because you know what? They will help because they don't want you to default. In some cases, they've lowered the interest rate, lowered the monthly payment, as well as taken away some of the debt because, again, they don't want you to default. Hey, if you're having issues with your car loan, talk to them. Tell them what's going on. There are forbearances, but you need to understand what's going to occur, what fees are, and stuff like that. Even if it's a mortgage, okay, there's nothing wrong. FHA, VHA, and most mortgage contracts, there is a forbearance clause that allows you to forego payments for 6 to 12 months. Some cases, they're going to ask you to repay everything at the end of the 6 months or 12 months, or maybe at the end of the 30-year mortgage. So you might have a 30-and-a-half-year mortgage because you took a half year off. I just wanted to share those things. One of the best ways to go about curing that debt hangover is get on it right now. Remember, you know what? It's always better to earn an interest than pay an interest. So with that, we're going to hold on to the next segment. I want to thank you for sticking with us. We've got an outstanding segment next. It's all about maximizing Social Security and the things you need to do to make sure you get the most out of Social Security. So stick with us. We'll be right back here on Saving with Steve.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to the show. I want to thank you all for joining us again. Just really quick, I really want to thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you letting your friends, family, and associates know about the show. Again, all the replays are on www.savingwithsteve.us. That's www.savingwithsteve.us. If you have a comment, if you would like to hear about something, if you would like, you know, just to have a topic discussed, go to viewers@savingwithsteve.us and tell us what you're thinking. If we can get that question on the air or get that topic on the show, we'll definitely do it. We want to thank networks like UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, 247 AM FM, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV. All these networks, again, are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal and financial freedom. So go to our YouTube channel, subscribe. If you want to follow us, it's Saving with Steve Sexton. That's Saving with Steve Sexton. Hey, please follow us. Appreciate you joining the show. Now, we're going to be talking about how to maximize Social Security. I think it's really important to understand how Social Security is calculated. First of all, they're going to take the top 35 earning years, okay? They're going to take the top 35 earning year, all right? So if you've been earning for 35 years, they're going to take the top one, okay? If you've been earning for 10 years and, you know, at minimum, you got to have at least 10 years of paying into Social Security or 40 quarters, you know what? They're going to take the top 10 if you don't have 35 years. Then what they're going to do is they're going to give you 90%. They're going to take the average of that. So let's say for easy math, you have $120,000 is your average earning for the 35 years. That's $10,000 a month. For the first $976, they're going to take 90% of that. And then they're going to, the next amount, they're going to take 25% of that and then 10. And that's how your Social Security is calculated. Now, the top Social Security payment for full retirement in 2021 is $3,113. The average Social Security payment in 2021 will be $1,596. So obviously there's a big discrepancy there, okay? So I think we need to understand a few other things. So let's just talk about this. Now, we talked a little bit about how it's calculated. The next thing that we need to talk about is when's the best time to take Social Security? Because what you really need to look at is If you're getting 3113 is the maximum at full retirement at age 66 or 67, depending on when you're born, at 62, you would only get 70% of that. At age 63, you would get 75, 64, 80, 65, 85, 66, you're going to get 90% of that. And if your full retirement age is 67, you'll get 100% at 67. So you got to remember, you're giving up some of your benefit. Now, if you go over, for each year you go over or wait to take your Social Security, you'll get an 8% increase, okay? So that means that if you're getting $1,000 at full retirement, you're going to get $1,320 approximately at the age of 70. But here's a couple things that we need to understand. One, if we are taking Social Security at age 62, we're receiving a payment. If we're retired, we have to make up that payment somewhere else. So if we're getting $2,000 a month at age 62 or $24,000 a year, we either have a pension, Social Security, and those type of things that are going to have to supplement your retirement in order to make up for that. The question you want to ask yourself, and you want to do this through analysis with a financial advisor, and that question you want to ask yourself, how will that affect my future income? And right here, I want to share a little secret with you. Retirement is all about the income to do the things you want in retirement. It isn't always so much about the assets. Yes, the assets do create income, but there's many ways where you can get guaranteed income that's inflation that you don't have to pay as much assets for. It's not all like what you saw with Ing, where they had the big number above your head and say, hey, here's my number. No, it's really about the income you have. You want to have the income to do the things you want in retirement. And if you can't support that income, then we have some problems. So we need to take a look at, hey, between the ages of 62 and 67 or 66, how much am I spending of my principal that could be growing to support me when I'm 82, 83, 84, 85, especially if I have health issues, my wife passes away, and so on. Now, there's things that you can do if you're married. Now, if you're married and say, for example, one person's getting $3,100 a month in Social Security at full retirement, and you have the other spouse at full retirement, they're only getting $900, they're going to be eligible for a spousal benefit. Now, the primary person, the one who gets more, has to be taking their Social Security. But once that person takes that Social Security that, you know, they were getting $900, now they're going to get $1,550, which is a $600 or $700 raise per month. They can select a spousal benefit. That person has the opportunity to continue with the spousal benefit till they're 70 or the rest of their life, depending on what makes sense. In some situations, we have found that taking a spousal benefit not only benefits the spouse now, but they can switch over to their primary benefit at the age of 70 because that 8% increase. Okay, so it's really important to take a look at that, because we've had some people that are just under half of their spouse's Social Security and they take the spousal benefit, but their own personal Social Security grows at 8% when Social Security itself grows by about 1.5. So they're getting a bigger raise for their personal Social Security. So at the age of 70, they switch, which allows them to have more money. And I've had people that have, you know, it's almost a $400 or $500 difference. That's $5,000 to $6,000 a year. That's a $80,000 to $120,000 over my lifetime decision. So it's important to make the right decision here, okay? So you really want to take a look at this, sit down with a financial advisor, figure out how to maximize your Social Security. There's many calculators that you can get to go do that, but most financial advisors have it. But you want to do that in the context of your retirement, because the last thing you want to do is forego $2,500 a month for 4 years, $120,000, and then realize, hey, I'm 85 years old, I'm going to live for another 5 years, but darn it, I could have used that $125,000 to grow to be $500,000 to support me when I need that money in the next 5 years. Does that make sense? Okay, other things. Hey, I want to work and take my Social Security. No problems. If you're younger than full retirement age, you can make $18,600. For every $2 you make over that, you're going to lose $1 in your Social Security. So it's really important that you pay watchful attention to this and understand that's exactly the way it works. Now, if you're a year or less away from your full retirement age, so let's say you just turned 66 and next year you turn 67, and you decide you take your Social Security and you're still working, you can make 48 $1,000, almost $800. And for every $3 you earn over, you lose $1 in Social Security. That makes sense? Okay, so you have the ability to earn more, but if you make too much, you're going to still have to give a little bit back. There's a penalty for that. Now, here's the thing. Once you pass full retirement age, there's no limits, there's no caps, there's no restrictions. So what are they really saying to you? What they're really saying to you is this. You know what? If you're retiring early and you want to take your Social Security, you can't really make that much money. But once you hit full retirement, hey, sky's the limit. You can do whatever you want. So the whole idea here is they want to put you in a position where you're taking that a little bit later so they can prolong Social Security. So the next big thing is taxes. Now, if you're single and just your income is less than $25,000 a year, you'll pay no tax on your Social Security. If it's over $25,000 all the way up to $32,000, hey, you're going to pay taxes on up to 50% of your Social Security. If it's over that $32,000 or $34,000, I'm sorry, you're going to pay tax on up to 85% of your Social Security. So you want to calculate this into when you take your Social Security, how it affects your taxes. This is a good time to have your financial advisor and your tax professional on the same page. If you're married, hey, if your earnings are less than about $32,000, you're not going to pay any tax on your Social Security. It's between 32 and 44. Up to 50% of your Social Security is going to be taxed. Over 44, up to 85% of your Social Security is going to be taxed. So it's really important that you look at all those things. But most important, you want to start taking a look at those if-thens. You just have a few more minutes. So here's the final thought. If I know that I'm 62 and I'm going to get $2,000 a month, but at 66 or 67, I'm going to get $3,100 a month, what would affect my retirement if I go without, hey, for the next 5 years, taking $24,000 or $125,000 that I would forgo, but I have to backfill unless I'm working to make up for that? Okay, how is that going to affect my retirement? What does it mean to me not only now? I want to thank you all for joining us today. We'll look forward to seeing you next week. And with that, I want to thank everybody for joining us today. I want to thank our networks, UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, 247 Radio. With that, we're going to be signing off. This is Saving Steve Sexton with the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. We'll see you soon.
Thank you for joining us for the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Save with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton.